Welcome to the Good Health Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Good, a certified functional medicine practitioner, registered nutritionist, and author. In this podcast, we delve into the world of energy and immune health and wellness with positivity, from optimal health and energy to stress and burnout, right through to immune conditions such as thyroid and autoimmune disease. We deep dive into functional medicine, nutritional medicine, and lifestyle medicine, as well as the personal stories of our amazing guests, from Olympians to famous faces, and guest experts from all different parts of the health and wellness world. It's time to stop letting your health hold you back and become the optimal version of you. Don't forget to come and join the conversation on Instagram at good_health, that's G-O-O-D-E, or visit the website nicolegoodhealth.com to find out more. When we talk about energy, it's very often framed as a mindset issue. We're encouraged to be more motivated, more disciplined, more positive, as though energy is something we can generate through willpower alone. But energy doesn't begin in the mind, it begins in the body. At a biological level, energy is created inside our cells. It's the result of how efficiently our systems are functioning, how well they're communicating with one another, and whether the body feels supported or under threat. This is why so many people feel frustrated. They're doing all the right things on the surface. They're trying to stay positive. They're pushing themselves to keep going, and yet their energy just doesn't follow. You can't mindset your way out of a cellular energy deficit. If the body doesn't have the resources it needs, or if energy is being diverted elsewhere for stress or immune defense, no amount of motivation will sustainably fix that. It's also why energy problems rarely have a single cause. Low energy is almost never just about stress or sleep or hormones in isolation. It's usually the combined effect of several systems being under strain at the same time. And that's an important shift to make because it changes how we respond. Instead of blaming ourselves, we start asking better questions about what the body is responding to and what it needs in order to restore balance. Energy isn't created by motivation, it's created by biology. This systems-based way of thinking is how we approach energy inside the studio and clinic, and it's the lens we'll be using throughout this episode as we unpack what actually drives energy at a biological level. Welcome back to the Good Health Podcast. I'm Nicole Good, certified functional medicine practitioner and founder of the Good Health Clinic, where we support people with low energy, burnout, and complex health concerns by looking at the body as an interconnected system rather than a collection of isolated symptoms. In this episode, we're taking a deeper look at the biology of energy. We're moving beyond mindset and motivation into what's actually happening inside the body when your energy is low, and why energy issues are almost never driven by just one system alone. If you've ever felt frustrated by doing all the right things and still feeling exhausted, this episode will give you a much clearer framework for understanding why. So let's get straight into the conversation. To understand energy properly, we need to start at a cellular level because energy isn't created by routines or habits in isolation. It's created inside your cells by structures called mitochondria. Mitochondria are often described as the energy producers of the cell or the batteries of the cell. But what is important to understand is that they don't just generate energy randomly. They respond to the signals they receive from the rest of the body. They adjust output based on demand, safety, and available resources. This is why energy issues can't be fixed purely at a lifestyle level. You can eat well, exercise, and sleep more and still feel exhausted if the cells themselves are under strain or working less efficiently. From a clinical perspective, low energy is rarely about lack of effort. It's far more often about the mitochondria deliberately reducing output because the environment doesn't feel supportive. There are a few common things that place ongoing strain on mitochondrial function. Chronic stress is one of the biggest. Stress hormones change how energy is produced and used, and over time, they shift the body into a state of conservation rather than optimization. Inflammation is another major factor. The immune system is energetically expensive. And when there's low-grade inflammation present, whether from stress or gut issues, infections, or environmental load, energy is diverted away from day-to-day functioning and towards defense. Nutrient depletion also plays a role. Mitochondria rely on a steady supply of micronutrients to produce energy efficiently. When intake, absorption, or demand is mismatched, energy production becomes less efficient, even if blood tests look relatively normal. And then you have sleep. This is critical. Sleep is when mitochondria repair and regeneration occurs.
When sleep is short, fragmented, or non-restorative, the body loses that repair window. Over time, output drops, not suddenly, but gradually. An important nuance here is that mitochondria adapt long before they fail. So reduced energy output is not a sign that something is broken. It's actually a protective response. The body is choosing efficiency over exhaustion. And this is why many people don't feel dramatically unwell. They just feel consistently low in energy. They're still functioning, but at a reduced capacity. Clinically, what we often see is not mitochondrial damage, but mitochondrial inefficiency. Energy production hasn't stopped. It's simply been dialed down in response to ongoing strain. And that's an important distinction because efficiency can be restored. When the environment improves, when stress is regulated, inflammation is reduced, nutrients are supported, sleep becomes more restorative, mitochondrial output often increases again quite naturally. So when we talk about supporting energy, we're not talking about forcing the body to do more. We're talking about creating conditions where energy production can safely rise. Once we understand that energy is created at a cellular level, the next piece of the puzzle is timing. Because energy production isn't just about how much energy the body can create. It's about when that energy is available. And cortisol plays a role here. Despite its reputation, cortisol isn't a bad hormone. It's essential for energy, alertness, and resilience. And under healthy conditions, cortisol follows a natural daily rhythm. It rises in the early morning to help us wake up and feel alert, and it gradually falls through the day, allowing the body to wind down in the evening. When that rhythm is working well, energy tends to feel steady. We wake feeling relatively refreshed, we have reasonable focus during the day, and we're able to relax and sleep at night. Problems arise when stress signaling disrupts that rhythm. Chronic stress, whether psychological, physical, or inflammatory, sends repeated signals to stay alert. The timing of cortisol release can shift. This is when people often describe feeling exhausted in the morning but wired in the evening. They struggle to get going through the day yet find that their mind is racing when they should be resting. That's not lack of discipline, it's a rhythm problem. From a biological perspective, this mistiming has real consequences. When cortisol is elevated later in the day, it interferes with sleep quality. Even if you're asleep for enough hours, the sleep is often lighter and less restorative. And because deep sleep is when cellular repair takes place, disrupted rhythms directly affect mitochondrial recovery. The body therefore loses valuable repair time, which further reduces energy availability the following day. Cortisol timing also influences hormone balance more broadly. It interacts with the thyroid hormones, insulin regulation, and the sex hormones. When rhythms are disrupted, those systems often struggle to maintain balance, adding another layer of strain to energy production. This is why fatigue isn't always about having too much or too little cortisol. More often, it's about cortisol being released at the wrong times. The body may still be producing stress hormones, but in a pattern that works against rest, repair, and sustained energy. And again, this isn't a failure, it's an adaptation. The body is responding to signals that it needs to stay alert, even when that alertness is no longer helpful. Supporting energy in this context isn't about suppressing cortisol, it's about restoring rhythm. When the body feels safer and stress signaling quietens, cortisol timing often begins to normalize naturally, and energy improves as a result. So a key reframe to hold on to here is this. Fatigue isn't always low cortisol. It's very often just poor timing. And timing is something we can gently support when we work with the body rather than against it. One of the most common and overlooked drivers of low energy is blood sugar instability. When blood sugar is stable, energy tends to feel stable and reliable. When it isn't, energy becomes unpredictable. Blood sugar volatility is what creates that familiar roller coaster effect. You might feel reasonably alert after eating, only to experience a sudden dip in energy not long afterwards. That dip may be accompanied by irritability, brain fog, or a strong urge for something sweet or caffeinated. Afternoon slumps are a classic example. They're often blamed on poor sleep or long days, but biologically, they're frequently linked to how blood sugar is being regulated or misregulated across the day. Stress hormones play a big role here. Cortisol and adrenaline help to raise blood sugar in the short term, which can be useful in acute situations. But when stress is ongoing, those hormones repeatedly push blood sugar up, followed by compensatory drops. Over time, this makes energy feel increasingly erratic. It's that blood sugar roller coaster. And this is why people often feel temporarily better after sugar or caffeine. Both provide a quick rise in blood glucose or stimulate stress hormones, creating a short-lived sense of energy or clarity. But because the underlying regulation hasn't changed, that lift is usually going to be followed by another dip. It's not a long-term solution. Clinically, what's important to understand is that blood sugar instability doesn't only happen in people eating obviously unbalanced diets. I see this pattern frequently in people who eat what would generally be considered a healthy diet, especially those who are under chronic stress or skipping meals or overtraining or relying heavily on stimulants to get them through the day. When blood sugar isn't well regulated, the body has to work harder to maintain balance. That constant adjustment drains energy over time. Even if meals look nutritious on paper, the timing, composition, and context, particularly stress levels, make a significant difference. This is also where energy, stress, and your metabolism intersect. Poor blood sugar regulation increases stress signaling, which in worse worsens blood sugar swings. It becomes that self-reinforcing loop that leaves people feeling tired, reactive, and frustrated. And this is where the energy, the cardiometabolic, and the stress pillars all cross over in clinic and in the studio. Supporting energy here isn't about perfection or restriction. It's about restoring stability. When blood sugar becomes more predictable, energy often becomes more predictable too. And for many people, this alone can make a noticeable difference in how they feel day to day. So if your energy feels like it rises and falls without warning, blood sugar regulation is one of the key areas worth understanding. Not to control it obsessively, but to support it intelligently. Another major and often invisible drain on energy is inflammation and ongoing immune activation. And here we see this immune pillar that we have in the studio and in clinic coming into play. This doesn't always have to look like acute illness. In many cases, it's low grade, persistent, and very easy to miss. From a biological perspective, the immune system is metabolically expensive. Mounting and maintaining an immune response requires a significant amount of energy. When the immune system is activated for long periods of time, even at a low level, energy is quietly redirected away from everyday functioning and towards defense. Chronic stress is one of the most common drivers of this process. Stress signaling alters immune communication and can promote ongoing inflammatory responses. Over time, this creates a background level of immune activation that continuously draws on energy reserves. Gut integrity also plays an important role. When the gut barrier isn't functioning optimally, the immune system is exposed to signals it shouldn't normally see. This can trigger ongoing immune vigilance, even in the absence of obvious digestive symptoms. And here you can see that gut pillar coming into play. Recurrent or unresolved infections are another factor. Viral or bacterial exposures don't always lead to clear illness, but they can leave the immune system partially activated, quietly consuming energy in the background. And this low viral load is something that we see in clinic a lot. What makes this particularly frustrating for many people is that standard blood tests often look normal. Low-grade inflammation doesn't always show up clearly on routine markers, yet it can still have a significant impact on how energetic someone feels. This is where it's important to understand the body's priorities. When the system doesn't feel safe, whether that's due to the stress, the inflammation, or the immune challenge, energy is diverted towards protection rather than performance. This is not a malfunction, it's a survival response. Supporting energy in this context isn't about suppressing the immune system. It's about helping the body to feel safe enough to reduce unnecessary defense. When inflammatory load decreases and immune signaling settles, energy often returns quite naturally. So if fatigue feels disproportionate to what you're doing or persists despite good sleep and nutrition, immune load is an important part of the picture. And it's not something to fear, but it's something to understand and support thoughtfully. When we step back and look at everything that we've covered so far, a clear pattern emerges. Energy is not created by a single system working in isolation. It's the output of many systems interacting with one another constantly and dynamically. Mitochondria determine how much energy can be produced at a cellular level. Cortisol and circadian rhythm determine when that energy is available. Blood sugar regulation affects how stable that energy is going to feel across the day. An immune activation determines how much energy is diverted towards defense rather than daily functioning. Even when one of these systems is under strain, energy can drop. But more often, it's the combined effect of several systems being slightly out of balance at the same time. This is why piecemeal approaches often fall short. Targeting sleep alone or stress alone or nutrition alone may help temporarily, but it rarely resolves the issue fully if the wider system isn't supported. It's also why people often feel like they've tried everything. They've addressed individual symptoms, but the underlying coordination between those systems hasn't been restored. From a functional medicine perspective, the goal isn't to force energy back up. It's to remove the barriers that are limiting energy production and availability in the first place. This is why the optimal energy course is structured step by step, because energy is never just about one system in isolation. Supporting energy effectively means understanding how these systems interact and addressing them in a thoughtful and sequenced way. And importantly, this approach is not about doing more. It's about doing the right things in the right order so the body can respond safely and sustainably. As we come to the end of this episode, I'd encourage you to just take a moment and think, not about the aim of fixing anything, but simply to notice, where do you recognize energy dips in your own day or week? Are there particular times when that energy feels less steady, or moments where it drops more noticeably? And as you think back over what we've covered, which system do you sense might be under the most strain right now? Is it the sleep? Is it the rhythm? Is it the stress signaling? Is it blood sugar stability? Or is it that immune load? You don't need to be certain and you don't need to act on this immediately. Awareness is that first and most powerful step. In the next episode, we'll bring all of this out of theory and into real life. I'll be talking through the energy patterns that I see each week in clinic, how these biological processes show up day to day, and why energy looks so different from one person to the next. But for now, hold on to this perspective. Energy isn't random and it isn't a personal failing. It's a reflection of how your body is functioning as a whole. And when we understand that, supporting energy becomes much more grounded and sustainable process. If you've liked this episode of the Good Health Podcast, please don't forget to like the episode or subscribe or review us. And please do share it with anybody who you think may benefit from listening to this episode. I'll be back next week with another episode of the Good Health Podcast.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Good Health Podcast. Do share the episode with anyone you think it may benefit and help us to spread the word on all things health and wellness by rating, liking, or subscribing to the podcast. If you want more, you can listen to more episodes on your favorite podcast app or sign up to my newsletter for my favorite tips, tricks, health advice, brands, recipes, and more at nicolegoodhealth.com/newsletter. Have a lovely week. Don't forget to hit subscribe and I'll see you on the next episode of the Good Health Podcast.